You're listening to Bella Figura, The Tradition of Living Beautifully. I'm your host, Dolores Alfieri Taranto. In this show, we explore Bella Figura, the art of beautifying all facets of your life, with a focus on heritage as a means to do so. In each episode, I talk to designers, writers, fashion bloggers, healers, and others from various ethnic backgrounds about what I call the holy, the elemental, and the majesty, their culture's spiritual style, its principal values, and their lineage and family stories, all in a straight talk manner with minimal woo-woo. Join me in spiritual conversations for the rest of us. Your heritage is your superpower. Learn how to wield it. Hey guys, it's Dolores. I just want to drop in a quick note here before we start that the audio in this episode, unfortunately, is not as clear and smooth as you're accustomed to hearing and as I prefer to have it. It's definitely still easy to listen, but I just wanted to flag real quick that we had a few technical difficulties. So if you hear some glitches, my apologies ahead of time. Hey there, everyone. Welcome back. This is episode 7, and we are just moving right along here. I hope you're enjoying the start of summer. Certainly, my husband and I have been really trying to absorb the fresh air, the sun, the loosening of restrictions here in New York following quarantine, and you know, the last few months just dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. So we've been seeing our families more and really just trying to take baby steps, you know, still be safe, still be smart, but really just open up to life again. And it's been very rejuvenating, to say the least. So I hope you're all well out there and doing the same with your families and your lives. It's scary, but at the same time, it's very necessary. I also want to thank everyone who has taken the time to leave a review on iTunes. Your reviews have been really wonderful, and they do give me the strength and the energy to keep going and producing the shows. So thank you so much. The reviews are also great because they draw attention to the show. The more of them you have, the better it is, of course, and the more 5-star reviews, even better. And drawing attention to the show means that more people will be drawn into the conversation, but it also helps me to keep getting these really terrific guests. So if you haven't left a review and you're enjoying the show, it would be a wonderful, appreciative thing you could do. Love hearing what people are thinking, and it means a lot to me if you can take a few minutes to do that. So with that said, today's episode, I'm going to file under the holy, which is, of course, our culture's, ancestral culture's approach to spirituality and religion and the more mystical and intangible experiences of our lives. And I have really been just waiting to air this episode because it's just so full of magic, because my guest is magic, basically. I don't know a better word to describe her. This episode, before I start, was recorded as things were really getting heavy here in New York when it came to the virus. So, you know, just keep that in mind as you're listening. This was recorded earlier, kind of at the beginning of the quarantine. Actually, not the beginning, but, you know, like a few weeks after we were really starting to reach the peak, which here in New York had been a very scary time for everyone. So my guest today, I'm so excited for you to meet her. Chloe Garcia Pons is a Mexican curandera, healer, herbalist, and channel, working through the power of prayer and candle work. Curanderismo is a holistic approach to wellness that has been used in the Americas pre and post contact for hundreds of years. In Mexico, it is also known as Mexican traditional medicine.
A curandera may be referred to as a woman of knowledge, or if trained in traditional native ways and serving their native community, a medicine woman. Chloe's multicultural upbringing shaped her life and nomadic songlines, her healing practice. So as I said just a few seconds ago, Chloe is magic. She was so generous with her time and actually gave me a healing session before we even started recording and stayed with me for, I think, like an hour after we stopped recording to generously kind of tell me what she was picking up about some of the things that I had been dealing with at the time and some of the things that I need to work on, because part of her practice and her gift is to be a channel and to be an intuitive and feel and sense and see what it is going on inside, you know, her client, the person that she's working with at the time. As I mentioned, this episode was recorded when things were really closing in on us here in New York, and Chloe very much sensed that before I even started recording. I don't think it was an accident that we had finally scheduled this session to do this episode on the day that happened to be the day where I probably had my worst day of the entire 3 months of quarantine. And by worst, I just mean I felt so tense, so closed down, and just so much anxiety. I just feel like I was picking up all of the vibes in the air and all of the nervousness and the uncertainty. And it was perfect timing to be speaking to somebody like Chloe on that day. And after our conversation and our talks, I completely shifted energy and I was just like a new woman from then on out. Also, just want to mention that I've been working with Chloe ever since we recorded this episode. So I have become one of her clients. And just to give you an example of the work that she does, of course, we're going to talk so much about it as soon as we dive into the conversation here. But, you know, as all of you know, I had a baby 8 months ago, and some of this kind of parts of the weight, the pregnancy weight, and also some issues that I had with, you know, including my abdomen muscles, etc. I just felt like I was stuck and not progressing. And from the first kind of second I met Chloe, she told me that weight wasn't going to come off until I healed the trauma from the birth, which was more or less traumatic. Things not going the way I, you know, thought they would. And I had to endure a fair amount. So since I started working with her and she's been working on healing that trauma, and I as well have been working on it, you know, I feel like I've been making so much progress. It really just kind of started moving right along. I found a physical therapist who, unbeknownst to the physical therapist, told me the same exact thing that Chloe had told me, but the physical therapist was also able to teach me, you know, hands-on therapeutic practices to deal with my scar tissue. And I don't think it's an accident that once I started working with Chloe about releasing the trauma, the physical therapist came into my life to give me more advice on how to do that on a very physical level, not just an energetic level. So, you know, all of it's related. When we start going down these paths and working on these things, God will send us the messengers, the helpers, the books, the podcasts, the shows, whatever it is that help move us in the direction that we have started on. And ever since I started doing this, I started working with Chloe. These things have come into my life and I am seeing progress very quickly. Pretty amazing stuff. So I know I just gave you a mouthful of an intro there, but with this guest, it was necessary. All right, let's dive on in to this terrific episode and I will catch you on the other side. Enjoy. Chloe, welcome to Bella Figura.
Thank you, Dolores, for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. You're a very busy woman, so it took a little bit of back and forth, but you're so generous to make the time. And I'm looking at you right now, your beautiful face, and I'm just going to let the listeners know that we are recording this in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. And before we got on mic, you could sense that I'm feeling very overwhelmed and stressed. I am, as you said before we got on mic, I am in the eye of the storm. I am in New York. And I was explaining to you that this morning, especially, it feels like the first day where I woke up and I really feel the pressure. The image that came to me was like what's that saying? Like you feel the screws tighten. That's how I felt today. And so before we began, you kind of reset my energy. And I just want to let the listeners know I really needed it. And it was very beautiful. And you actually, before I could even describe to you what I felt, you told me, and which is amazing. So this is who we're dealing with today, folks, okay? A very powerful healer. And we're going to talk a lot about what's happening right now. You're a former New Yorker. You lived in Brooklyn, correct, for 20 years?
I lived in Manhattan for 20 years, and then I lived in Brooklyn for 8.
Okay. And where are you now? Are you in Mexico?
I'm in New Mexico. I'm in Santa Fe.
In New Mexico. Okay. So your heart feels, I mean, everybody is feeling it, but as a New Yorker for so long, you know.
Well, I mean, there's a sense of responsibility, and also there's a part of me that feels very guilty not being there, because, you know, the city gave so much to me when I was growing up and part of my education and the woman that I've become. Mm-hmm. And not being able to be there to help my clients or to help my community, it feels very strange. You know, I pray for New York. I pray for New Yorkers. I pray for all the people that have come into my life and that have experienced this beautiful healing work. But it's greater than New York in the sense this is the whole world is being reset in many ways. Even though we want to resist the change and we're going into this fear mode, but it's also very nourishing and very soothing for the earth. And that sort of spirals into our lives as well. Because the fact that we're slowing down and we're connecting with our families and we're able to go into a place of deep healing for each other, it might not be something that we want to do or we want to look at. You know, people will feel a lot of anger and despair, yeah. But it's also part of what, you know, the greater picture, what the divine really wants for us as humans to go back to a place of understanding who we truly are. You know, we've gotten so disconnected.
You feel like this is a lesson in that in some ways?
I mean, I feel that there's been so many lessons throughout the years that we've not wanted
right,
to listen.
Right. Okay.
And we keep thinking arrogantly that we can just continue to rape and pillage the earth and that we can just benefit from that without having any consciousness. And I really do think that this is a time where all of us in all social economic parts of our lives, you know, it's not just affecting developing countries, people that don't have much. And we're so used to in Western societies witnessing all of this happen to people that are less fortunate. And so the fact that it's happening also to the Western world, the developed countries, and that people are suffering, you know, they're being the thing that they work on the most, which is making money and having security. That is what is taken. Everyone is being affected. It doesn't matter if you're in a lower income bracket, middle class or upper class.
Right.
You know, so if it means that as a whole, we're going to have to sit with this discomfort and have to come up with something to help all of us.
The discomfort, I think that's a good word. And you mentioned a little bit before we got started that this is a time where we really do need to rely on ourselves. And I think today part of my rising level of anxiety was me realizing that in a way. And also I'm home with my husband and my son and realizing that like I can't fall apart. I have to, I mean, I can have perhaps a moment here and there, but like, I have to hold it together and turn to things that will help us, not just allow us to kind of fall apart. You know what I mean?
But you know, the thing is that we think that falling apart, there's something negative about that.
Okay.
We have to be able to allow the tears and the sadness and the grief and the frustration. We have to fall apart in order to be able to gain an understanding of what it means to be empowered. If we continue to wear a mask where everything has to be perfect and everything has to be in order for us to feel safe, we're not really truly embracing this experience as a collective, because everything that we know is falling apart.
Right.
And so in order for us to let go of that control of wanting to dominate that sense of security, we're finding a new sense of security. What being empowered means: understanding how to take care of each other without being told how to do it. We're so used to being in the society where the government tells us what we need to do, how we need to think. You know, we've lost our touch of what it means to be vital, that vital force, that vital, that light, that song that we were born into, with that connection to the earth and understanding that we are sustained by her. And that if we stop and we start to slow down and we start to listen to her ebb and flow, even if we don't want to, even if we're resisting that, she teaches us everything: how to be patient, how to release expectations, how to truly forgive, and how to truly be abundant. Especially now with the spring coming, we have this symphony of birds that are just overwhelming. The sky is clear, not contaminated with pollution. Like the birthing of every sprout, of every flower, everything is pushing out of the earth. And we just take the time to witness that energy. That's the energy that we need to tap into in order to feel that we are going to overcome this and survive this.
Right. I think that's kind of, I mean, not everything you just so beautifully said, but in a sense, by not falling apart, I think I meant like, I have to do something. Like, it's my responsibility to heal myself and to tend to my family. And I have to turn to the tools that I have been working for many years on cultivating, you know, and there's no running. I think that's what I'm trying to get. There's no running. And I think that's what I felt today, that there was nowhere to run anymore.
All the things that you've been reading about or trying to understand concepts, you're actually, now it's the time to implement mm-hmm. them. Because sometimes we go into spirituality and it's sort of on the surface. We're like reading about all these concepts.
Yes. That's right.
And we're still going on about our life, but not really implementing those truths.
That's exactly right.
And so now it's a time where we have to sit with this and understand the truth of what we're trying to explore as human beings.
That's exactly right. It's time. I think today I realized that this is the time. This is when you use all those things. You don't just talk about them, read about them. It's actually a literal matter of survival.
Yes.
Using these tools. That's exactly what I was realizing today, that this is really, you know, back against the wall time, and we all have to dig in. So we will get to some of those tools as in our conversation. That's definitely something I want to talk to you about.
I mean, I want to remind, I mean, we as New Yorkers, you know, we experience something very challenging in our city with September 11th.
Right.
And we got to see how the humanity, we all came together and really brought the best of ourselves to help alleviate the grief and the pain of all the people that had died in that moment.
Right.
And also the impact and the shock that it created in our city. And then as everything, as life, you know, like we all went back to a sense of normality.
Yeah, we did.
But this is different in many ways. It's because it's sort of like approach it. We are as humans the most vulnerable that we've ever been, because without our health, we have nothing. And so when we talk about boosting our immune system and strengthening our energy field, you know, these are concepts and words that people might find funny or don't really understand. But that is the only thing that we can control right now. Taking care of our well-being, our minds, our bodies, and our spirit. Because the way that we have just allowed society to take over, not giving us enough time to rest, not giving us any time to connect, to be completely overcharged by technology and by the expectation of everyone else in the world and the movement. Everything has been so fast that we don't have time to heal in any way. Because I've seen in my lifetime so many people get sick because of stress, because of not allowing themselves to go through and understand, you know, what grief or anger can do to the body. And so even though this feels like absolute nightmare, it is a blessing in disguise for the world.
I hear a lot of people saying that we won't ever be the same. And the skeptic in me goes, no, we will, because of 9/11. I think of 9/11 and how we thought the same thing and how we were all brought together and the whole country was getting along. We were all Americans, but you know, we went right back to biting each other's heads off. Look at the past several years. The cynic in me says we, for good or ill, will forget this. What do you think about that?
Well, I focus a lot on the new generation, and I see how empowered they have become with trying to preserve what we're leaving them. And I talk to a lot of teenagers that are angry, but they're also sort of like indifferent. They're like, well, if all these people have to die, we'll let them die. Mm. They did not take care of our earth. They're not taking care of us. No. All they care about is, you know, making more money, having everything be controlled by certain types of. And so when you hear the youth being angry at us for not protecting them and how they are sort of detached by the fact that all of the elderly and all these people are passing from this, they're sort of like, well, the earth needs to breathe. Let her breathe. Let her find peace. Because we, as children, we're marching and we're talking on her behalf, but no one's taking us seriously. So in a way, I feel like the world will change because, I mean, I'm 44, I'll be 45. So I'm at a stage in, I mean, I still have a couple of more, you know, I have a long life left.
Right.
God, I'm in the middle of my lifespan.
Right.
And so all these archaic ways of thinking and being, you know, and trying to impose the force on a global economic political spectrum, all of that is dying. And maybe this is the first time in our lifetime that we get to witness something where we're actually seeing real change. Because I did not experience World War I or World War II.
Right.
But I know that through history, when after that happened, a lot of things changed.
Right. That's a good perspective. Yeah. That perspective helps, I should say. Yes. Yeah.
So we are at war.
Right. Yes, we are. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about World War II because I've done a lot of reading of, you know, writers who write about World War II, a lot of fiction, you know, just through my lifetime. And you always, you know, you always know through history that life was, you know, you think of like the Parisian artists and writers and the Left Bank, and they were just doing their thing and life was grand. And then boom, war broke out and they're rationing butter and hiding underground during air raids, and nothing's the same again. And I don't know if the comparison is appropriate, but in a way, at least that sudden sense of change, at least here in New York right now, it feels eerily similar.
Well, I mean, that's when countries came together and became allies and
right.
helped each other.
Right.
The thing is that now it's not about allowing the United Nations or, you know, or different political countries to take care of us and unite us. This is about allowing us as humans to feel united, because no one is escaping this. It's not because your color, your religion, your,
right.
you know, your economic background. It's like,
Yeah.
We are all affected regardless of any of that. And so the only thing that we can do is support each other in this time. When you're down, I help you. When I'm down, you help me. Yes, we need to have certain things. We have to social distance. We cannot be around each other just because of the fact that the viral, you know, it's because it is so contagious. But it doesn't mean that we cannot reach out to our community if it's in a virtual way.
Right.
In order to empower and to continue to give hope. And
it's,
I think,
true.
That is the most important, is that we still have that power in us to inspire and to create beauty and to have a ritualistic aspect of our life. If it just means waking up, taking a shower, cleaning our house, creating a sense of order, a sense of discipline that gives us tasks not to let ourselves go into desperation.
Right. Right.
If that means we have to learn how to cook again.
Which a lot of people are doing, literally.
I find absolutely beautiful.
Right. Agreed.
That people are baking again, that people are having breakfast and dinner and lunch at a table, all you know, gathered together. Like, when was the last time families had time to do that?
It's true. It's true. And people are doing more, like, kind of exactly what you're saying, like these things that our ancestors did every day and just by default that we have gotten so far away from. And I think it's a necessity, but it's also a nourishment. And, you know, I mean, you need both. And it's true. And I think that the thing that really, like today, I reached out to my cousin. I reached out to one of my aunts. Our aunt who passed away, her birthday on Sunday. And I pray to her all the time, but I was praying to her specifically on her birthday, just feeling like that she'd be more present. Right. And we all have a sign that we feel like we see for these loved ones we share that we've lost. And I saw the sign the next day, and then I saw it again yesterday. And so I reached out to my cousin to tell her, because it's her mother. And then I reached out to my other aunt. Anyway, the long story short is my aunt, you know, she actually texted me and said, I texted my sister and I told her, I just want to cry. And she said she cried all night. And it's so sad, right? But it made me feel better, because that communal solace, especially among women, I was like, this is what I need right now. We need kind of to just, like, kind of what you're saying, you know, just sit with that and say, like, we're worried about our grandmothers, our mothers, our children, ourselves. We miss each other. And we want to cry, or we're crying.
But the thing is, crying is, it's a gift. You know, that's just allowing all of the heaviness to be released. And allowing the body to receive more light. That is, we are so blessed as humans that we have the capacity to cry, because that is our gift to release. We have our voice. We can scream. We can let out the frustration. We have our tears that purify and cleanse the soul. We have our hands, if it means that we have to paint or draw,
yes,
or make music. I mean, we have all these beautiful tools.
It's true. Yes. And I think that's a lot of what people are feeling now, that need to do something tangible and physical. I know I'm feeling it. I just ordered like $200 worth of materials to make rosaries.
How beautiful.
Because that was what I feel. And I think what I'm going to do, I've been thinking about it more and more, waiting for everything to arrive, that I think what will make me feel the way I need to feel is I'm going to make them for certain people. Put them in an envelope with a note, drop them off in their mailboxes. And I think that's just something I need to do. And you're right. I would not be doing that right now, as connected as I am to crafts and the rosary. You know, I don't know that I would be doing that right now if it wasn't for this.
But it's just like, when we stop resisting and becoming angry and not understanding why this is happening to us, and just saying, okay, well, I'm in it and I'm going to make the best out of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to connect with my creative voice. If it means I'm going to start cooking, if I'm going to start writing, if I'm going to start painting, if I'm going to access that for my child and also with your loved one. I mean, to create more intimacy. It's like, that is what the world is asking us, is the interest to receive and to connect and to create more intimacy with our families, with the earth, and with our neighbor.
It does feel that way. It really does. It's accurate. Yes. So, yeah, we didn't plan on just jumping into all of this, but that's fine. It's a beautiful conversation, and I'm sure everyone will need to hear it. I do want you to talk a little bit about, let's start with you telling us a little bit about your people and where you come from. You know, let's talk about the road that led you to know all this wisdom and to be able to share it. So, you know, tell me about your people and where you come from. Let's start there.
You know, I think that we've been going back and forth about heritage and ancestry.
Right.
And I do come from a very strong female ancestry. You know, my grandmother on my mother's side was Cherokee Indian. Mm. My grandfather on my mother's side was Ukrainian. And he immigrated to this country. And so I feel very close to all of these different Eastern European flavors, spirituality, as well as Native American connection to the earth. And then on my father's side, Mayan and Mexican. And okay. So that is, having a combination of all of that is, it just feels, I mean, I think when I was younger, I didn't really understand what it meant to have all of these traditions and these strong voices, spiritual right. voices in my life. I mean, I knew that I felt very safe and that I was always, they were very open about, my father was a Catholic and my mother was a Jew. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up encompassing both of those religions, but not having anything be imposed on me.
Okay.
So there was an understanding of both as a history, as a tradition, and whatever as a woman, what empowered me and what made me feel safe in that conversation with the divine. It was never, no one ever told me, you have to believe in this and believe in that. My quest of understanding what I wanted to understand with my connection to God was left up to me. Mm. And I thought that was really beautiful.
Were you part of any like traditions of, like, for instance, did you go to mass?
I mean, when with my father, it was very important that I did my confirmation and my communion, and
right.
I went to Sunday school. And when he passed away, my mother, even though she was not a Catholic, she just thought that your father wanted you to continue your spiritual awakening or your path, and she allowed me to continue to go to mass on Sunday and do all of these kind of, what do you call, like, I right now in English, I'm having a little bit, but just
sacraments.
These moments, the sacraments, but also just like initiations.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then, but I was rebellious, like when my father died and my sister passed away, like I was very angry at God.
Sure.
And I didn't really want to go into church and pray to a God that I was angry at, and I didn't connect to the sermons, but I didn't connect either going into temple and listening to, you know, so it was right. this kind of void of like, well, how am I supposed to feel if I'm angry, how am I supposed to release this anger and feel connected to my ancestry and the spirit world if I don't believe in anything?
Sure.
And so that was also part of finding my own voice. And understanding that I was not connected to a dogma or a doctrine, but I was connected to nature. And so that's when I started tapping more into my connection to the Native American side of my family, and also the indigenous part of my family in Mexico, and really going deeper into the truths of natives and their connection to earth. And then that made sense to me. Because I could grasp the ceremonies, I connected to the healing power of those ceremonies, and I felt that I was connected to that voice that I was always trying to find. For me, I don't disregard any type of religion. I respect all religion, I think it's important to be open and to read scriptures and to find your truth in whatever that is authentic to you. But right. That's also part of the unveiling and the spiritual awakening is your self-exploration of self. You know, you might be given all these things when you're growing up, but you have to connect and really integrate that truth in your life. I think it's very important to have faith. But in order to have faith, you have to believe in your truth, and you have to believe in who you're praying to and why you're praying and why you're elevating that spiritual frequency in your life. If it's something that is dogmatic and is being told to you that you need to just do it the way that you were taught to do it, then right. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, the big part of wanting to do this show is because I obviously very strongly believe that if you can incorporate the, you know, what I call the holy, the spiritual traditions of your ancestors and of your culture, your life, as your kind of your whole life and your work is proof, is so, it's so enriched, adds so much depth, because you're not just doing something dogmatically, or, you know, at least it's not, that's not what I mean. If that works for you, fine. But it doesn't have to be, it's not about a straitjacket and, well, this is the way my ancestors did it, this is how I have to do it. It's not that. It's about saying, what is your birthright? You know, your holy spiritual birthright. What did, when you pray, is there a way you can pray that feels so right to you because it's in your blood, literally?
Well, for me, it was very important because I was a very strong-willed child, very rebellious. And as a woman, you know, that was not enforced, you know, that was not placed. But there was a part of me since I was a child that I knew that I had to fight for injustice and I had to fight for the truth. And there was always something that felt, I mean, I was fortunate enough that I lived in countries where I had the freedom to do that. But I was also exposed to other cultures where I got to see women that were not, didn't have that privilege.
Right.
And so at a young age, I understood that I was fortunate and I needed to do something meaningful with my will and my strength, not to give up and not to cave in and not to let anyone dictate or tell me what I can and cannot do.
Mm. I'm just thinking of all the women I have had on this show so far. And I would say every one of them is like that. It's interesting. It just came to me that every one of them's rebellious when they were younger, strong-willed, and there's always this journey, perhaps away from their ancestral culture and their heritage in that rebellion, and then finding your path back in a way that fits you, in a way that feels correct.
Like, but it's not easy.
No, it's not. It's not.
The most important thing in the journey is not to lose faith. Hmm. Because you will always have obstacles. You will always have people that will tell you, you know, what are you doing? You're crazy. You know, you're not fitting in. You need to come back to a place where everything feels safe, because that's how they're projecting their reality of you in their life. So, you know, it's not, my life has been beautiful in many ways. It's also been very challenging, and there's been hardships and there's
sure.
been a lot of sadness, but my reward was that I never gave up. I still am going on my path, not knowing exactly where I'm going.
Right.
I speak to this presence that is not tangible, you know. It's like I live in a very abstract world, but in a very earthly, having an earthly experience. But my faith and my love to the unknown allows me to help others. That also comes from people always told me, Chloe, you need to grow up. Grow up. And I'm like, I don't want to be the eternal child. I don't need to grow up.
My family likes to call me a late bloomer, which I think is another way of saying you took a really long time to grow up. Yeah.
What is growing up? If it means not being innocent and not seeing beauty and being fearless, I don't ever want to grow up.
Right. Well, I spent a lot of years just, you know, writing poetry. And them wondering what the hell I was doing with my life. So that's kind of what I mean.
You need to write poetry.
Yeah, well, you know, now you find a way to kind of to integrate it all, right, in your adult life. It's true. You know, not to be too dark, but I think there's, we start with darkness and we kind of get to light. But you mentioned the passing of your father and your sister. I have heard you talk about their deaths as kind of catalysts for you. And listen, death is always around us. It's always a part of our lives. However, of course, right now it seems too close.
Right.
I just was hoping you could talk a little bit about, you know, those experiences of loss in your life and how they kind of changed you. And you became positives, if that's the right word. I don't know if that's the right word.
Well, the thing is that, you know, in my country, in my cultures, in Mexico, we live in symbiosis with death. And we celebrate it. We have beautiful, beautiful celebration of a week. And we feed our ancestors and we sing to them. And we go to the cemetery and we bring music to their graves and we feed their souls and we have these beautiful processions, and then we have our altars that we put in our homes. And so there's a sense of that the physical body is no longer present, but that the spiritual body is around us, and that we have 1 week every year where we can feed their memory and celebrate their life.
And there's a name for that week, right? What is it called?
Día de los Muertos.
Right. Okay.
The Day of the Dead.
Right. The Day of the Dead. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I think, you know, as a child growing up, knowing that we had access to that, you know, and that it wasn't that the physical body was not being buried into the earth or burned into ashes, and that we would never be able to connect with that essence again, it was really important for me to feel my connection to my father as a young girl and not feel that I was completely abandoned by his love. And that I had to find that language, if it was through a smell that reminded me of him, or a song that would come on in the radio and that would remind me of our time together, or walking in nature and seeing a bird or a butterfly or something that allowed me to connect with his essence. And I think that allowed me to have a language with him. Now, my sister died when I was 18, so my understanding of death was already heightened.
Because your father died when you were 8, right? Do I have that right? Very young.
Yes. So 10 years later, I was still able. I mean, it's heartbreaking when you lose the people that you love, and you have to experience the anger, and you have to be able to forgive, and then you have to be able to detach, and then you can integrate your language with them. And I always tell people, you cannot bypass all of that. And you have to let the time that it needs for you to integrate that reality. And it is true that time makes it easier. It doesn't mean that it erases it, the moment. There's still days where I am, you know, I walk in the mountain and I miss my father and I cry to him, and I'm 44 and I miss him more than anything in the world. But I don't repress that, saying, no, you know, it's been enough time. Like, I should not be missing him. I will always be connected to him.
Right.
And I will always miss him. And I will always want to feel his presence. And if my tears connect me to him in that moment where he needs to hear me and I need to feel him, I am so grateful for that.
You said, I read an interview or heard an interview that you said that you wanted to see kind of evidence of his manifestation. Go ahead.
Well, when I was a child, it was more of a challenge that I was having with God. You know, and I remember, because I did at a young age start hearing voices. And I did do strange things when I was a child. After my father passed away, I left Mexico, and my mother had remarried my stepfather, who was another Mexican, but he was in the political realm. And so he was ambassador at the United Nations in Geneva. And so we moved to Switzerland. And so that brought us into a whole different realm, you know.
Sure.
And I remember in our home in Switzerland, like we lived very close to a cemetery, and I just, as a young girl, I would just jump over the wall and just spend hours near the graves, and I could hear the voices of the dead. And I remember singing to them and just bringing them flowers. And my mother, you know, was always like, where are you? What are you doing? And in our garden, we had this beautiful willow tree, and I would always find birds or animals that had passed, and I would create these beautiful graves for them. And she just didn't know what to do with me.
She sure.
She's like, if anyone finds out what you're doing, not only is it, they're going to put you into
right.
Uniband, right. But it's going to affect your, you know, your stepfather's political.
Right, exactly. Yeah. For if people find out his daughter is, and our stepdaughter, I'm not sure what you go by, but right.
His daughter.
Right. So, you know, skipping through the cemetery singing songs, it's not going to look good politically. It's true.
I had to really like repress my intuitive power in my voice during that time.
Yeah, which happens to so many of us in one way or another. So clearly you believe the spirits of those we lost are still with us.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you explain to somebody who's perhaps, I doubt on the fence, because I think if they're listening to this show, they're not probably not on the fence, but how can they access that or strengthen that relationship with the spirits that are around them?
Well, I think it's very important first to activate an altar.
Something I wanted to talk to you about too. Go ahead.
And, you know, to put the image of their loved ones and then a lot of the elements that awaken that memory. Even if it's just lighting a candle, which is your light and their light, and being able to have a conversation with them. It's as simple as that. You know, we forget the power of invocation of a voice because we think that we have to pray internally.
Mm.
But In order for us to awaken that connection, we have to start speaking out loud. Because the thing that spirit loves the most is to hear our voice. That's why we love, you know, that's why music has such a strong impact on our emotional bodies. Because when we hear a great song or we hear someone singing their heart out, and it's just electrifies us, it moves us. We want to dance. We want to smile. We want to connect. We want to kiss. All of this is awakens. Well, it's the same when we start talking to our loved ones that have passed. When they hear our voice, they get excited. And they're like, it's sort of like an affirmation of that they're not scared to call us into our lives.
That's a way to lean on them right now, a way to call on them.
Well, you know, right now it's like not only people are very scared and they want to connect to something that is going to empower them and to give them more strength in their voice with that connection with God. And so, yes, they're going to be praying and asking for protection and all of that. But at the same time, invoking your ancestors and asking them to come and protect everything that is sacred in your life is also really important, because we can give our faith to God. You know, I use that word in a very global, that energy,
right,
that encompasses faith. But also working with the people that have passed that are in your life, that's part of your lineage, and that really reinforces and helps the protection and the guidance and the security that you need in order to feel safe within, because you're talking to your blood lineage.
Mm. I don't know if I'm going to be able to articulate this, but I'm going to try. So I'm always someone who I have an altar. This is a very big tradition in my Southern Italian culture. I grew up with, my mother had an altar in the corner of her bedroom. There was always candles, like you said, articles that belonged to the person, palms from Palm Sunday, photos, prayer cards from the person's mass after their death. So it's very natural for me. So that's always been a big part of my life. My father passed away. We're going on 12 years, October will be 12 years. So of course he's a very big presence in my life still. I feel lately such a need to call on them. And I also feel like they're right here. Like I feel like they're right next to me in like they are worried too. And I don't know if it's just this kind of frenetic energy that's here in New York right now. I don't know if it's just me projecting, but almost as if you were calling on them before, it was like a whisper. And now it's like a moan or something like that. Does that make any sense?
No, of course it makes sense, you know, because they're around you and they're feeling your energy. So if you are scared and you don't feel secure about your situation, then they're going to make their presence known.
Mm.
You can understand that you are supported in this moment.
Mm. Okay. But
what you need to do in order to help that presence feel safe is create that safety inside of you. Because the way that before we started the session, I tapped into your energy field, you know, there's a lot of doubt, there's a lot of fear, and it's very normal in this time. But when you are magnifying that, everyone's going to feel it. Your child is going to feel it. Your partner is going to feel it. And the spiritual realm is going to feel it. So everyone is going to start reacting in a certain way because of the energy of the fear that you're allowing to flow into all aspects of your life. And so that responsibility of calling yourself back and saying, I have to work on releasing that in order for everything around me that I love, if it's my spiritual realm or if it's my child or if it's my husband, doesn't get affected by it.
You know, the baby has not been napping the way he usually does. And I just today, I thought he knows. He feels it. He feels, and I was calling it like he feels what the rest of us feel, but probably what he's feeling is what his mommy feels.
Yeah.
Which makes me really
he's an extension of your heart.
Yeah.
And so he's also a teacher in your life. So the way that you see him feeling safe and loved is how you have to feel for yourself.
Mm.
We are in uncertain times. A lot of things are happening. We have no control over this. But what we can control is how we react to the situation. And if your child is teaching you in this moment about unconditional love and security, then tap into that energy and let him be your teacher.
I like that.
Because if you lay next to him and you close your eyes and you just breathe into that essence of like of unconditional love with that child, with your son, he will fall asleep in your arms. And you probably will fall asleep as well.
I'm going to try that. I think we both need it.
We think, oh, we just need to put him in the crib or we just have to like this and this and that. But right now, like I know animals, that we all need that we need to feel the heart, you know, the way that we feed. You know, that we breastfeed, that the child is feeling the heart. When it's just a newborn, you know, they place the child onto the body in order to still feel connected to that heart.
Right.
And it's the same right now, the way that your husband needs to be connected to the heart, your son needs to be connected to the heart, you need to be connected to your heart. And if your ancestors are around more present to remind you of that, how beautiful.
Mm. That's all terrific advice. I'm going forward with that in my mind. I need to hold him more.
The first thing I learned when I was going through my spiritual journey is the importance of the mother's touch.
Mm.
The reason why we all love to get body work done, or we like to have people feel like to release tension or all of that with massage work or any of that stuff, it's really just having human touch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's true. And it's sometimes when you really need it, you almost feel that like you could cry because it's just that release from that touch.
The most frustrating thing for me in this moment is not being able to see my clients and to give them that hug, or to be able to hold them after we release whatever we need to release. it's been very challenging for me to do this virtually.
Sure, sure.
Because when I have someone on the other side releasing and I'm not able to physically be there to hold them, I mean, it's devastating.
Yeah, you're not accustomed to it. It's not how, yeah, you've been doing things. I did want to talk a little bit about your quote-unquote return. I don't know if you would describe it that way, but meaning you were rebellious as a teen and even maybe in your 20s, and then kind of coming back to your ancestral culture and rediscovering these things. How did that start? And also, why did you feel like that was necessary? Because I wrote down a quote here. You said you were in India. You started your studies in it. Go ahead.
What really happened was that, so I was living I had a really beautiful life. I went to great schools. I traveled. I had access to a very privileged environment. I got married when I was very young. I got married when I was 21, actually, no, 22. And my husband was older and he sort of took care of me and said, and released me of any type of responsibility towards myself of evolving. And I gave him all that power. And I thought, it's great. You know, I'm 22. I'm finishing college. I have someone that loves me and is going to take care of me, and I don't really need to become anything. Well, it's not, I mean, when that it's not that easy. You can't just give your
Wouldn't that be nice? Just wrap it up in a bow, give it away. All right, done.
And so part of my, when I entered my Saturn return, when it was in the age of 26, 27, my marriage had fallen apart. We had been married for about 8 years. And I had to rebuild myself and understand who I truly was. And so in experiencing the death of a marriage, everything resurfaced. The death of my father, the death of my sister, you know, me being scared of being who I wanted to be, but maybe was not allowed because it was not socially acceptable. But I just remember being in the shower and crying my eyes out and saying, I don't like who I'm becoming. I don't feel connected to anything. And I needed to let go of everything that I knew that made me feel safe, especially when it came to a financial situation or security. And I had to walk away from all of that and just know that I was going to be taken care of in whatever way that meant. And so when I went to India, I really felt alive again. And I connected again with parts of myself that I had not felt alive in many years. I think the last time I had felt really authentically connected to who I was when I was 16 or 17 years old.
It's a long stretch.
So part of that unveiling was letting go of a lifestyle that I thought was what I needed to be happy. And I rebelled against my family because everyone, you know, just thought I was nuts. Like, how can you let go? You have you're affluent, you have a nice lifestyle, you're set, you can travel whenever you want, you have beautiful clothing, you speak all these languages, you live in this very jet set world. Like, you're going to give all that up and you're just going to go into the jungle and hang out with natives and, you know, be poor. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm choosing.
You got it right. Wow, that's very brave.
But, you know, it's in the moment, it just felt like that's what I needed to do in order to find who I was. But everything that I thought that I was going to lose came back to me. You know, my lifestyle hasn't changed. I still can travel, but I travel with work and I do what I love to do and I meet amazing people. I have the freedom that I've always wanted to have. And I wake up every morning and I'm absolutely in love with my practice and my work and my connection to the divine and meeting people like you and meeting people all over the world that I can, I mean, it's the biggest gift. So when I was doubting during those 7 years of what am I doing? Am I ever going to be able to be in a place where I'm going to be happy with myself, or I'm going to find my sense of purpose or my security financially in the world? Like, I had lost everything and I was willing to lose everything, but I gained everything in a much more rewarding way.
I love that. I think that fact of life, of being brave and bold enough to let it all go, is huge. It's so hard to learn. I mean, Lord knows it took me so much pain and struggle to learn that holding on so tightly just makes everything worse. And that also when you do let go with this faith and this trust, you just kind of put one foot in front of the other. It really all does come back to you in ways, like you said, that are more, they're the ways that really belong to you.
Exactly.
They're the ways they were supposed to come to you. You know, perhaps you were always supposed to travel the world like you're doing now, but the way you're doing it now. And before, you could have held on to that because, well, that's something I want. I want to travel the world. How else am I going to do it if I don't do it this way? Well,
you know, the thing is that because of my family's background, like, we lived all over the world, we traveled, but it was my father's life that was giving us access to that way of living. And then when I married my husband, it was my ex-husband, it was his work that was allowing us to live that way.
Right.
So I kept living my life according to other people. Right. And it got to the point where I was like, I am not finding myself in this reality. I mean, I'm grateful for the life that I had as a child. And I'm also grateful for my marriage, you know, even though it didn't last and things happened in a way that we just were not meant to be together in this lifetime. But what I found is that I needed to feel good about what I was doing and bringing into my life as a woman.
Exactly. And now it's your work that allows you to live that way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. So in this time that you were in India, I've heard you say that you loved, it was a beautiful country and it gave you so much, but it was not your country.
Well, the thing, India is sort of like the mother of creation. And for me, when I traveled there, it was sort of like a journey of independence. You know, getting on a plane and traveling for 15, 16 hours on your own, arriving in a country that you've never been to, everything is completely different. And I spent that first time alone. I didn't go with anyone. And I wasn't scared. I wasn't scared to be alone. I wasn't scared to be across the world from everything that felt safe.
Mm.
It felt empowering. I was like, finally, I'm free.
Mm.
I can become and I can transform into anything that I want. And so for me, India, you know, I kept traveling to India for, you know, almost 10, 11 years consecutively, twice a year. Because it was part of my initiation of independence.
Right.
But the thing is that I'm not Indian. Even though every time I would arrive in India, they all thought I was Indian.
Blended right in. Look at that. It's a spirit. Mm-hmm.
But I needed to go back to my father's roots. I needed to go home to myself. I had been all over Asia. I had been traveling all over, because Asia is a very ancient civilization spiritually. And so everything that I was grasping and capturing in my essence, because it was absolutely so profound to see everyone in reverence in their daily life, to prayer, to love, to beauty. But it was not, I felt like I was a spectator. I was just observing all of this beauty and all of this reverence. And I wanted to go into it. And I wanted to tap into that. But it wasn't mine. It was only when I went back home to my country and I started creating and going into the ceremonies of my people that I said, okay, now I'm home. Now I understand. I've traveled all around the world. I've been to all these very sacred places and I've seen people pray and I've seen people go into these places of profound connection. But now I'm feeling that.
Exactly.
I know what it is to cry to the earth because I feel the earth because it's my earth. It's my, is mi tierra, no? It's my, I feel my ancestors. I feel my father. I feel when I go into the water, that's where he loved to fish. That's where my uncle's ashes were spread out. Like, I mean, because I do, you know, my family's from the Yucatan, from Merida, but I spend a lot, most of my years cut up. I live in Tulum half of the year in the winter. And so for me,
beautiful,
being close to that water and being close to that land is very symbolic because it's connecting me to my father.
Absolutely.
I could not understand that until I was able to do that for myself. But when I was a child and I was living in Europe, like I had the mountains, I had, you know, when I was in Switzerland, when I was in Paris and all of this, like I had all these beautiful settings, but it was not. I couldn't find my father in that.
I totally resonate with all of this. Obviously, it's why I'm doing the show and why I wanted to have you on in particular. I wonder for people who are listening and kind of trying to find their way to that, do you have any advice for them of how they can kind of get started on that journey of feeling that which belongs to them by birthright, as I say, because I had the same journey, and so many people I've spoken to have too, where especially as a Southern Italian Catholic, then I'm growing up in New York, I'm free spirited, I'm creative, I'm modern. I go away to college. I get this kind of very liberal education. Catholicism's terrible. The church is dogmatic. The priests are patriarchal. You know, this is what you hear. And then little by little, you're kind of left with nothing, right, that belonged to you and your ancestors. So my job was to kind of sweep all that away and over the years, bring it all, incorporate it all and bring it all back and actually realize the truth, for instance, which I've talked about in other episodes, where in the Southern Italian tradition, the patriarchy really is not respected. And the idea of needing a priest as I'm forgetting it right now. I know this word. I've said it before. Anyhow, having a priest in the middle, right, to speak to God through you is not a thing. I've known so many devout women who have probably never been to confession because they don't see the need for that. It's a very rebellious culture.
I remember when I was questioning my faith, it was always like, why? I cannot read a book that omits the feminine divine. There's only one woman in the Bible that is allowed to be revered. And I did not find, I was not connected to that one woman.
Right.
So then I started reading the Gnostic Gospels and understanding why as women were we so... we were not present in society and everything that was sacred about us was omitted in sacred text. And so my quest for authenticity of my gift and my connection to the divine, I had to understand why in our society that people were threatened by us and how in pagan ways we were revered. There was, you know, there were the goddesses and then society, you know, we gave love and we nurtured that connection. If it was with the earth, if it was with the female divine, and then all of that was omitted, all of that was taken away in order to create a religion to, in my mind, to control the masses and to create fear. And so we were only allowed to have one woman, which was the mother of Jesus, to be present. But then we grew up as women feeling guilty if we desired, if there was passion or with our sexual energy. Like, how were we supposed to be growing up and not being able to access and connect to that because it was dirty? Or because there was a certain form that we had to comply to. If not, we were going to be judged. And then this whole thing about being either, if we were not good enough, we were going to go to hell. And for me, that was, I just was like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
I don't want to be a woman living in fear of my body, of my essence. It's like, and as a child, I rebelled against all of that because I didn't understand how that was loving. If we did have this God, how could he only love us if we were a certain way or acted a certain way? Because my understanding of love is all encompassing and it's forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also expanding. It doesn't
right.
bring you to a place of fear.
It's really a failure of a mode of teaching. You know, that's kind of, I feel like we're all victims of this way that things were taught. But if you access, you know, whether it's Catholicism or any other religion or just, you know, some kind of spirituality in general, you can reinterpret it. It really is an interpretation that just, I mean, it just happened to dominate the world for a really long time, unfortunately, you know. But if you step back and you look at a figure like Jesus, and you look at the similarities between a figure like Jesus and Buddha, there's many similarities, more similarities than differences. And you start, it just becomes a wider view. And then more of this comes in, this idea of love and compassion and endless love. I mean, that's the cross.
I mean, we're all human living a spiritual experience.
Right.
And the only thing that we need to understand in this beautiful journey is that when we are loved and when we are witnessed and we are seen, we can love and we can witness and we can see.
Yes.
We are not separate and we should not be divided. And if this, what is happening now in our world right now is allowing us to connect in that way and to put our differences aside and see humanity as one and to help each other overcome this moment of fear and of doubt and of also of loss, because a lot of people will die, but we are there to hold each other and to help each other through these moments and to love each other. Regarding our color, our religious, you know, background or economic background, we are brothers and sisters. We are love. And we need to support and love each other in all these, in this moment. And when this ends, we should continue.
Right. We need to continue. Agreed. Do you have a way of describing why the return to your ancestral culture was kind of the click that worked for you? Do you have a way of describing what that is? I mean, I feel like I'm going to do 100 episodes of this show, and I'm still going to be trying to describe it.
I think when you understand your lineage, it gives you a strength, an internal strength. You know, being Italian, being Mexican, being African, I think in a way we have an advantage towards Americans, because
I do. Mm-hmm.
You know, what is an American? And I think that there's a sense of like, well, we don't even know what we are. I mean, our parents came from here, from Europe, or came right. from here, but like an American doesn't have a sense of belonging the way that a Mexican does. I mean, there might be a lot of Mexicans living in America, and they are loving living in America, and they're very grateful for the abundance and prosperity they receive and the work. But they love being Mexican.
Right. Sure.
I mean, we are proud of being Mexican.
Yeah.
Because of what we go back to our countries and our history and our culture and food and music and everything. I mean, it's the same in Italy. Like you are an American. You were born in America, but you are Italian.
Mm-hmm.
When you go back to Italy, you're proud. You're like, my God, this is an amazing country.
Right.
And I have roots and I have ancestry that stems from that. And that gives us our strength and it gives us a sense of security and who we are. So when you connect to your ancestry and you understand your power and your strength with the land, with the culture, with the history, you're coming into the world with all of that. And so if I had to awaken and be a spiritual guidance to people on my own without my ancestry, without knowing where it's coming from, I think it would be very isolating. But I am empowered and I continue to believe in my work and believe in my connection because I see the strength of where it comes from.
Beautifully said. That was beautifully said. I agree with all of that. I think perhaps less so for immigrant generations now, but certainly for a lot of Italians who, you know, I'm first generation, so my parents came here after they got married. So I'm very close to the source, right? My whole being and upbringing was steeped in it, in the language, in the cult, in the traditions. But for a lot of people, it's way more removed. Maybe it was their great grandparents who came, or even their grandparents. And one of the things about America, and of course, I'm so proud to be American, but one of the things are it strips you of that. And the work that I think so many people need right now, which is, again, why I started this show, because I was seeing that, is they're kind of stopping and looking and saying, well, who am I? Where did I come from? You know, am I just somebody that like makes money and works? And do I have a place in this life? Does my blood come from somewhere? And the work is to kind of reintegrate that into their lives. And so many people are, you know, they look at ancestry.com, look at people learning about their DNA, because you're not well, in my opinion, like you're not whole if you're completely detached from that.
Well, I think I remember my grandfather when he immigrated from the Ukraine and he moved to this country. You know, I think for people, they came with a lot of fear and they needed to integrate immediately.
Yes, absolutely.
So I saw it firsthand, you know, like they had to feel more part of the new world and forget the old world. And so it was my generation that kept asking questions about their lives, how it used to be. But there was a fear to talk about it because... Yeah. You know, not everyone was very accepting when certain people arrived to this country. No. And I remember my grandfather, all his friends were Italian, because when he arrived, they put him into the ghetto with the Italians. So right. There was the Jewish and the Italians and everything. And so, you know, I grew up, when I would come to see them in America, very oblivious. But as I got older, I understood, so the country club that I would go to was a Jewish country club. And I was like, well, why? What's the difference between a normal country club and a Jewish club? Well, the Jewish were not allowed at that time to be part of that country club.
Right.
They lived in Texas. So I would come and visit them in Texas. And so then I started understanding the atmosphere that they grew up in, where there was division, even though that my mother was first generation of this country. She's an American, but she grew up understanding that her parents, even though my grandmother was Native American, she's more American than most people, but my grandfather was an immigrant, and that there were people that not everyone was accepted.
Right. It's true. Yeah. And especially for us Italians, we have what I call like a great sin upon us, which was wanting to fit in. We didn't teach the language to our children.
Exactly.
And I can't tell you, Chloe, how many people I've met, especially from the first podcast that I started, which was solely based on Italian culture, who feel so like they are missing a piece of their soul. I mean, a piece of their soul, because they can't understand or speak the language.
And that is because I speak your
language. Right. You speak four languages, don't you?
Yes, I speak.
Amazing.
But Italian I speak Italian every day of my life. And when I'm around Italian Americans that don't speak Italian and they look at me, they're like, you're Mexican. And you speak
Italian. Right. They're like, damn, I can't even speak Italian. Here are you? Yes.
But the thing is that I've met a lot of Mexican American, you know, first, and they don't speak Spanish.
Oh, really?
Yes, especially in California, you know, because they were brought up with family members that wanted them to integrate in society. And then they thought that if they spoke Spanish, it would be a detriment for them not to fit in socially.
Really? Because I've always looked at the South American communities as doing such a great job of teaching their children the language.
Well, so there's South American communities that are just recently moved to this country that don't speak English, so they have to continue.
Right, you're talking about earlier generations.
I'm talking about the earlier
generation. Okay, I get that.
You know, I remember being in California, and I had this woman, she was in her 50s, 60s, no, I think she was 65. Mm-hmm. And she, when she met me, she just started crying because she was like, it's so beautiful to see someone be so proud of being Mexican and speaking our language and embracing our tradition. And I thought to myself, I'm like, but I was always raised to think that.
Right.
And she's like, well, I didn't have that choice. I had to mm-hmm. be omitted. I had to be raped from all of that. Like, I was not allowed to embrace my culture, my heritage. I couldn't even speak my language because, you know, we lived in times where people were not very forgiving or liking of us.
Yeah.
And so I think I feel so blessed that I grew up in a family where, you know, we were able to embrace our culture and our heritage. I mean, you know, my father being a politician, he was ambassador to the United Nations, but he was also ambassador to France and in England, and he was Secretary of State. And I saw him like love his country so much and how he represented Mexico all over the world. And so for me, that gave me strength and courage to represent my heritage.
Right.
And you know, yes, I grew up going to school in France, so I spoke French, and that was, you know, my education was in French, and I spoke English because my mother was American, and Spanish because my father was Mexican, and then I learned how to speak Italian because my partner's Italian, I have so many friends in Italy. It was just the world, there was no limit to what I could do with my education and who I was as a woman. So when I started encountering people that felt closed in,
right.
That's when I started feeling so sad for them. I'm like, no, I have to give them, if my lifestyle or who I have become is going to inspire these women to feel empowered about their heritage and their love for self,
absolutely.
Then let that be my message, you know, like no one should have to bow down and not
right.
feel proud of who they are.
Exactly. You know, and then so many cultures, including Italian Americans, there's so many stereotypes. And a lot of people, even of my generation, just pushed it away because they didn't want to be associated with being a guide or a goomba or a mobster. And for me, in the work that I have done, you know, in my life, I kind of speak out and represent myself, like you just said, with that in mind, as saying there is another model. And it's not just I'm going to be ashamed,
right?
Or I'm going to be the stereotype, right? We can be this kind of hybrid and also, you know, not be ashamed. I mean, I talk a lot about, like, I wear a lot of gold, as you can see. It's very traditional. I was raised that way. It's just part of our culture. And, you know, that used to be, I remember growing up in high school and stuff, I only wore sterling silver. You know, because that was
ostentatious.
I didn't want to be ostentatious. Yeah, I didn't.
Down.
Exactly. I didn't want to be associated with that. And now, you know, I think personally, I do a good job of integrating it. So maybe it's still like fashion-y. You kind of do your own thing, and that's okay. That's having pride and doing it beautifully, which is a really big part of this show too. You know, it's a way of beautifying yourself. And that comes from a tradition that I'm proud of.
I think you can inspire people to remain authentic when you believe in your convictions and when you are proud of who you are.
Yes.
And that's part of, you know, the healing work that we all do is incorporating that self-love. Of
absolutely.
Saying, okay, I can be different and I can embrace my culture and my traditions and not feel like I'm going to be excluded from society.
Right.
I am embracing myself and I'm loving all of this. And that feels very empowering.
Beautifully said. Exactly. Chloe, we've been talking for a long time and I could keep talking to you. I feel the best I've felt in a few days. But I want to be mindful of your time. But if you can see my sheet here, I still have so many things that I did not cross off. So which means I have to have you on the show again at some point. But I did just want to let the listeners know a little bit of what do your healing, when you work with people, what does that actually look like? What are your healing modalities, if there is a way to kind of sum them up? And then how are you doing that now? Since, as you were saying, you can't be with people.
Well, the thing is that when people come to see me physically, there's a whole ceremonial aspect of the work. And so I'm working with death very closely. So either people that are very sick that have cancer, or people that have been abused sexually, and then I'm trying to help them gain more confidence back into their body. But I'm removing and releasing that death, energetic death inside of them. And so, you know, sometimes I encounter people that have entities inside of themselves. And so there are exorcisms that are being performed. That's not the norm, but it does happen. And so that is the physical part of my work. When I see people, I am able to alleviate any type of death that is happening in their life, if it's a spiritual, emotional, physical death. And I help them gain more acknowledgement of their strength in their heart and to give them more faith to overcome the obstacles in their lives and to be able to unveil in a place where they can feel safe so they can move forward in all aspects of their lives with all their relationships.
Beautiful.
So then that's the physical part of my work. No, when people come to see me or when I travel, when I go to see them in their countries, like the ceremonial part and that healing in that moment. What I'm doing now, distant, you experienced a little bit of it, is I channel information for them. I'm able to get them into a place where we are able to feel safe so we can release a lot of the emotional trauma and blockages in the body. And then I ask them to lay down. And while they're laying down, I'm able to access their energy body and work distantly on those areas that are being blocked.
And do you feel this death or this block, or is it something you see, something you feel?
I mean, I'm guided and I hear and I see things, but when I'm working on the physical body, I know it's like I can see where that is, where I need to place my hands. And I know exactly, and then I start sensing the malaise or what is not, where it's blocked. And then I start channeling and seeing information about why it's happening. But the thing is, when I'm doing it distantly, I have to be very mindful that I'm not there. So, for example, I had a client maybe 2 weeks ago that had never experienced my work, and it was very profound. And she started really feeling nauseous, and I knew that she needed to throw up or that she needed to release in some form. And it was very challenging for me because I'm usually, when that happens with, you know, my clients, when I'm around them, if they faint or if they need to throw up, you know, I'm there to hold them and to revive them and to help them get back into a place where they're feeling safe. And when it's done distantly, I have to sort of tone down a little bit because I cannot go so strongly into their energy body, because if I'm not, there's a certain responsibility. And that's why for so many years, people have asked me to do this work distantly. And I've always said no.
I see.
Because I feel like there's a responsibility. And now it's actually quite beautiful because I'm allowing myself to sort of hone down on the intensity and to give people what they need in that moment and to allow that to be okay. And to know that they're receiving what they need in that moment. Because there's also part of me that wants to give them the most impactful experience, and I want them to feel like they can just overcome anything. But at this time, I also have to be able to be mindful of that process and give them what they need, even if it's just a moment of release.
I don't know if this is too technical, but I mean, not being in their presence, physical presence, like how does that work? I mean, how does the energy travel over the internet?
How did you feel?
Right. As it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, but I felt it. I think what I felt from you was a very strong intent and a trust. Like, I trusted you. And
you just met me.
I know, but I just met you. I know. But it's true. I know. It's true. I do like to think I have good intuition, but yeah, I just...
Yes. He trusted me because it was not me. It was, I'm just an instrument of what needs to be used or delivered to that soul. So you're seeing me in a physical form, and my voice and my demeanor is giving you a sense of safety. But for you to allow me to access your spiritual and emotional body, is subconsciously you're trusting that that divine energy is going to give you what you need in that moment.
I get that.
The way that I'm trusting that it's going to be, you're going to receive it, I'm removing my ego because it's not me that's doing it. The same way that you are allowing me or allowing that source to touch you because it's not your ego dictating where it's going to go.
I get that. It's profound. It took me a second, but I get that.
But you see that that's the importance of this work, even for me, is to understand that it's regardless of who we are, if we remove our ego from the situation, we can allow beautiful magic to happen.
So really, you could technically, I could do this quote by myself, to myself. But it's right. But the difficulty is I'm the one with the blocks right now. And well, my mind's racing.
Right. So it's like your mind is not allowing you to go to a place where you can access that self-love. Where you can, you do access it when you touch your son.
Yeah.
And so the way that you nurture your son is the way that you have to nurture yourself. That unconditional love that you give to your child, you need to give that unconditional love to yourself.
Yeah, that's a good reminder and a good way to put it. You know, you're the second kind of intuitive clairvoyant that I've had on the show, and both of you, I'm like, they see things. Like, I know, like I you know, like having a conversation with you, and I'm like, what are they seeing? Because I just know you see things. I just know you're seeing things. And I'm like, she's sitting there thinking, this woman is effed up.
When I see things or hear things, it's not judgmental.
Right. True.
You know, it's only for you to access what you need to believe in your potential.
But that's got to be hard, just seeing, I mean, everyone you meet, you see their death, as you described it?
Well, no. When people come to work with me because they're sick or because they've suffered or because they need to release something, in that moment, you know, I channel what work I'm going to do with them. So I sort of know what we're going to be doing that day. But when I go into a restaurant or when I'm flying, like, I'm not trying to tap into everyone around me because it would be really
exhausting. I mean, right. Yes. Okay. Okay.
No, I have a
turn it on and off.
Turn it off. Yes. Like,
okay.
People know me, like my dear friends, I am a cynic. I have a very strong sense of humor. Like
Yes, you do. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Earth. But when I go to that place where I have to be that instrument of that divine energy, I'm going into a very sacred place, and I become a different channel.
Well, listen, Chloe, the world, I mean, has needed the work you're doing for a while, but certainly no less right now. And I think the things that you were saying earlier, I mean, through the whole show, but earlier about this is our time here in the Western world to really reconnect with these things that other cultures and other countries had to rely on for survival, really. We're feeling that, as I was describing.
Not for survival. It was just part of their heritage, you know. I just think that we have been disconnected. The Western world has been disconnected from their spiritual nourishment. And we're just looking into these countries and seeing how they live in symbiosis with all of this and how that has helped them overcome so much tragedy.
They have tools for times like this.
Exactly. You know, if we're going to mirror each other and we're going to help each other, we have to take what's best out of all our cultures and histories and globally. It's not just our markets and economies and what we can profit from them.
Right.
You know, what we can profit about being able to see what the world can give us is how they have managed to overcome so many obstacles through their faith and their love and their devotion to that.
Wonderfully said. I think for listeners of this show, especially if they can take anything away from this conversation, it's that really that this is the best time. It's the time to turn to your ancestral traditions and to learn more about them and to access them. And you can work with somebody like you, even if you know you're not Mexican or you're not Native American, because you're still teaching that practice, right? And you're teaching in that vein. And that's why I wanted to have a show that wasn't just talking to Italian Americans, because I think, you know, you don't have to be Italian American or Italian to understand what I'm talking about.
Shamanism is global. You know, it's the thing is that when we talk about that medicine of the earth, because people call me curandera, they call me a shaman, they call me medicine woman, but that is a global language. You know, you have people in Siberia, you have people in Africa, you have people in Cuba, you have people in Brazil, you have people in Mexico, you have people in Tibet, in Mongolia, you have people that practice shamanism all over the globe. And we all pray and have the same rituals to the earth and to the heart. We're healing the human heart, and we're connecting that human heart to the larger heart of the earth. And it's not about cultures, it's not about religion, it's not about color or race. It's about the universal heart, which that for me just, you know, blew my mind when I was able to tap into that love. Because no one was disregarded, no one was put aside, no one was not wanted or judged or disliked. Everyone was loved in that universal heart and that universal teaching.
So it's a universal practice, and then there are different modes, there are different ways of approaching it based on our specific culture. That's probably a good way to say it. Yes. Yes. And it feels more authentic to us if we are coming at it from our ancestral culture, but that's why we all feel like it can be shared across the board.
I mean, this is a religion of love, and this is a healing practice of love. And we can all love each other, and we can all help each other. It doesn't matter where we come from. It's strengthened by an understanding of our heritage, because we can connect to our ancestry. But it's just love.
Perfect place to end. Wonderful. I am so grateful for this time with you. I needed it. I needed it more than I could describe, but you probably know that and could sense it. Just to wrap up a little, where can people find you and learn more about you?
Well, I think with social media, there's always Instagram, which is a great connector for me, because you can just go into my link and you can just ask for an appointment. And then I always write you back and explain to you more in depth, like if you want the distant healing or... Well, now it's only distant healing because
people are not
public. And then, yeah, it's mostly via Instagram. And then I also have my website.
Okay. And I will link to both of these, all of that in the show notes. I just wanted people to hear you say it. So Chloe, thank you for being so generous with your wisdom and your energy and your love and your time for a New York Italian gal who really needed it today. Thank you.
Oh my God, I send all my love and prayers to New York, and I love you guys so much, and I wish I was there to give you a huge hug, but know that my prayers and you guys are always all in my heart, the city that gave me so much and will continue to give me so much, and I just wish that I could be there with all of you during this time and feeding that energetic heart together. But don't give up, because my God, the city is such a resilient city, and the people of that city, they overcome any obstacle. If that's the lesson they taught me in my lifetime, is when we need to come together, we come together.
We're tough cookies.
Yes, but also vulnerable souls that are so beautiful.
It's true.
A lot of beautiful gifts, you know, beautiful teachings.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I would definitely love to hear from you guys what you thought about this episode with Chloe Garcia Pons. The last intuitive that I had on
for episode 5, Jill Willard, I received a lot of messages from all of you asking how you could work with Jill, and also feeling like you had her story resonated with you, because many of you, not surprisingly, have those same gifts and want to know how to cultivate them. So I would love to hear if you kind of felt similar listening to Chloe tell her story. So definitely DM me on Instagram. You can find me by searching my name, Dolores Alfieri, and I should pop up. I'm at Dolores_Alfieri_Toronto. So DM me, or you can email me at Dolores@BellaFiguraPodcast.com. If you're liking what you hear, please leave a review and also subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. And please share with your friends on social. I love that you just shared this hour with me and Chloe. Thank you so much for being a part of the community and the conversation. Here's to knowing your roots and cultivating a beautiful life from their power.